Week 5 in the Pac-12 was absolutely amazing. The only unbeaten team fell, one coach goes crazy, quarterbacks are falling by the wayside, and we find out that there is a saboteur amongst us. And we're going to break down all the Pac-12 teams, see who can still make the playoffs, and find out why Ralph wanted Arizona to win so bad he tried to sabotage UCLA. I'm George Reister with Ralph Amson, and this is the Pac-12 Apostles. Ralph, what a week in the Pac-12, man. Mike Leach, he melted down. You got quarterbacks dropping by the wayside. Khalil Tate Amson didn't even show up to the game. Well, he showed up to the game. He didn't play in the game. Oregon and Washington seem like the only teams that can make the playoffs. You sabotaged UCLA and because you wanted them to go 1-11. And then you're hot about the coaches poll. And I'm just looking at you like, oh, really? Now you're upset, Ralph. What is going on?
It's good to talk to you. I'm definitely UCLA fans are not my biggest fan right now. And I think we'll get into that in a little bit. But yeah, what a week. What a week. I'm not going to throw out the I told you so, but I did pretty well.
Oh my Lord, dude, you kicked my butt this weekend. Every game that I picked different from you. The only game I won was the Washington USC game. I mean, Cal, and then you recruited an entire Arizona State Army to gang up against me. Oh, haha, bad pick with Cal. Chase Garbers went down. If Chase Garbers doesn't go down, I win that game. I am correct. It's going to be a 10-point victory. Ralph, I don't understand why everybody's like, oh, huh, you made a wrong pick. No, the quarterback got hurt. I can't
well,
do anything
of all,
about that.
Most of my followers, I'd say probably about 25% of my followers are Arizona State fans who aren't yet sick of me bringing up Khalil Tate in casual conversation. So that's just going to come with the territory. And we'll get into the whole Cal thing, but I will just repeat what I said on Twitter over the weekend on this podcast, and that is that they scored more points with Devin Monster on the field than they did with Chase Garbers on the field. So it's kind of a moot point.
Ralph, that's what we're going with. They ran 12 straight plays, didn't even throw a pass and scored a touchdown, but you're going to give Devin Monster that drive?
They scored more points with him on the field than without him. I can only go off of the fact that he was responsible for 10 points and Garbage was responsible for 7 in a game where they scored 17. So what are you going to do?
And after the games, I saw you tweet something out because we put out our Pac-12 power rankings every Monday. We put out, you know, our picks later on the week, on the Thursday edition of the podcast. And we talk about who's great, who's not, all of this stuff. And, you know, I was hot about how you still had Washington ranked above Cal in the power rankings, despite Cal beating them. And now it's you who is mad about the coaches poll. And I just wanted to laugh.
Right.
I agreed with you, but I was laughing, Ralph. I mean, what
okay,
are you so
well,
upset
let's,
about?
Let's be very fair. I think both of us still had Washington State ranked above UCLA after what happened last week. So this is going to happen sometimes. And it's really going to come down to what your individual opinion is of any team at any given time. But the coaches poll came out today and it has Michigan State. Michigan State is the only one of these teams that I'm going to bring up that's even ranked. But it has Michigan State and Cal, which had the most votes of anybody outside the top 25. Michigan State and Cal, who each have one loss, and each of them have one loss at home, ahead of Arizona State, the team that gave them each that one loss. Arizona State has one loss. It happened at home, and they are ahead of Colorado, who only has one loss, which happened at home to Air Force. They are ahead of Air Force. The only team that Air Force lost to is Boise State, and Boise State's ranked 15th in the poll. The coaches poll makes absolutely no sense. I mean, this is it's egregious, man. You have a bunch of one-loss teams whose only loss is a home loss. Home losses are not flukes. Home losses to the teams that are behind them. And so I don't exactly understand what the quote unquote coaches are trying to do here. And I think you brought up a really good point when you commented on that tweet, which was that like this poll isn't really coaches voting anyway.
Yeah, it is. It's called the coaches poll. How the hell are coaches supposed to vote on who is the best team in the country? They don't even get a chance to watch everybody. They're focused on their team that week. And the coaches poll is not actually comprised of all the coaches in the country. It's a bunch of coaches who volunteer to rank. And then they choose from those like randomly each week that those coaches are chosen randomly. And I'm like, this is absolute insanity to take 64 out of 130 random coaches and you think that they know what's best. And then when you see their rankings, they have Alabama ranked number one. What? Excuse me? Alabama's played a grand total of nobody. Their team is good, but this is ridiculous. And we saw this a few weeks ago with Cal and Washington when I was so upset about it. And it makes no sense. It is there needs to be some rhyme, reason, and rationale. That's why when I come up with the power rankings, I'm all about three criteria: schedule play, dominance, and quality wins. And if you do that, you don't have to try to project out in the future of what a team can be. You just see what they are. You just see what they are and believe what you see. You don't have to try to make something else. But speaking of believing what you see, though, Mike Leach. Mike Leach had the ultimate meltdown after his team got boat raced by Utah. So in back-to-back weeks, they lose to a 130-point game to UCLA, 32-point comeback, and then they let UCLA beat them twice. And he said his team was that they just only play token defense token offense and defense. He said they were slow. He said they were fat, slow, and happy, and that they were reading their press clippings and that they were reading their press clippings and they were happy. Do you agree with this, Ralph? Is this okay for Mike Leach to say?
Oh man, he called his own team soft repeatedly. And soft is just the worst thing that you can be. Now he's not the only coach to come out and try to motivate his team by calling them soft. Danny Gonzalez, the Arizona State defensive coordinator after the loss to Colorado, came out and said we were soft. And he said that I literally mean that as the worst possible thing that you can say about another human being. It didn't get as much press because he's a defensive coordinator and not a head coach. And anything that Mike Leach says, creates a stir anyway. My initial reaction to this was, I mean, I'm older now. I'm older than I used to be. I just realized today that I have spent, and I think on this podcast and in like 10 other places, I have told people that I was 36 in the last 6 months. Today, I realized I'm 35. And so I'm like leaning into adulthood even harder than I need to. It's natural to just kind of like have a disdain for people who are younger than you. I understand it. In the last 2 weeks, my oldest son, who's 11 years old, his voice has lowered like two octaves out of nowhere, and I want to fight him. He hasn't done anything wrong. He's the sweetest, nicest, best kid in the world, and I want to fight him right now. It's just like something in me that's just like, oh, this young man is like here to push my generation out the door. And I don't even know where that comes from. First of all, it's natural to just hate on kids. It's a completely natural thing. You just have to make sure that when you go about hating on kids, you don't do it in such a way that paints you as so irrational that it justifies the way that kids look at older people, right? And so first of all, Mike Leach is soft. Let's get that out of the way. Mike Leach has never gotten over a single thing that has ever happened to him in his entire career. He doesn't let things go. There is nothing softer than permanently holding grudges. And I say that as somebody who has a tendency to hold a grudge every once in a while. It's the softest thing about me. It's the softest thing about anybody who does it, who doesn't just move on to the next thing. I remember a couple years back when he called out Todd Graham and said that Arizona State, you know, they were cheaters. That post-game handshake, Todd Graham got in his face. I've never seen a dude who looked like he never would have done anything in person more than Mike Leach looked in that instant right there. Like, he is truly soft. He is all talk. He is not going to say or do anything.
He's not going to bust a grape in a fruit fight.
No, he's not going to go walk those neighborhoods in California that he made fun of on Twitter. He's not going to do it. Like, he's calling out all these kids, and I guarantee you that if one of them went Latrell Sprewell, he would shit his pants. Like, there's
a, yeah, he'd be like, help me, Jesus.
Which, again, no kid should ever do. But at the same time, like, if you're calling your kids like fat and soft and all this stuff, and one of them doesn't know how to not prove that he isn't, when you're calling his manhood into question, other than to just like get in your face, which is something, you know, everybody wants to prove that they're not soft, right? And so, you know, I do not think that he would enjoy it. Let's just put it that way.
See, I would have stopped if I, so first of all, Mike Leach is right in terms of what he said. He said it's difficult to say how tough Utah is because they had token resistance on both sides of the ball from us.
So you're
We're
saying
a soft team.
But can you make that observation? Can you call an entire team soft based on taking a loss?
You are as strong as your weakest link, and I could see Nick Saban saying the same thing. I think he said it prior. He was like, we were soft today. We weren't physical. We feel entitled. We're not as focused as we need to be. So I think he was right. And he said, we get a lot of good press. We like to read it a lot. Who says that? Lane Kiffin and Nick Saban about the rat poison. Don't eat the rat poison. We like to pat ourselves on the back. And if we get any resistance, we fold. It's the truth. But while that is true, guess whose fault that is? The head coach.
I felt like he tried to go in that direction, but it was very much not clear that he was putting the blame on the coaches. He tried to steer it that way, but he was so busy demeaning his own roster repeatedly that it didn't sink in when he tried to make that pivot and say, it's the responsibility of the coaches to make sure these kids don't end up soft. And that I'm
because
telling you,
nobody it, read it, that. No, yeah, they aren't printing
right.
that part.
Right.
They aren't printing that part. The quote stopped with where he says they're fat, dumb, happy, and entitled. That's where the quote stopped. They don't show the whole rest of the thing because they want people to be outraged about it.
But even it seemed like he
blaming himself.
He did say it, but it seemed as though he lacked conviction. He should have. I mean, that was an opportunity to really chase the assistant coaches as hard as he chased the kids. And he didn't. It was just like, you know, these kids are a bunch of worthless, nothing, nobody, idiot morons that we never should have recruited in the first place. And I guess that's our fault for recruiting them. Like, it was just like a little aside, like, geez, dude, like, no, you are getting paid a ridiculous amount of money to coach a game. Battles are won in preparation, and preparation is the reason that you cash that check. He didn't say one thing about Mike Leach is soft or Mike Leach didn't do a good enough job. Like, that never came out of his mouth. It was just like, maybe we didn't do a good enough job. And so I don't know.
I've had head coaches and coaches in general say some really mean things to me. I had them say, son, you could screw up a free lunch. Son, you could mess up a wet dream. And I also had a coach tell me that if, I messed up at something and I came over to the sideline. This is in high school. I said, sorry, coach. I messed up. He was like, son, this is not your fault. Don't worry about you. It's my fault for putting you in. I was like, oh, Lord. Yeah. I had just transferred schools. I thought I was never going to play again. Because he said it with all his might.
That's so passive aggressive.
It is not your fault. You are okay. You are good. This is my fault. My fault for putting you in the game, putting you in that position, letting you go out there because I know you can't do it, essentially. That's such a backhanded compliment. I mean, just it's such a diss that is so bad.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, I just, how do you go back into this locker room and just like look at all these kids? Like, hopefully he said it in person before he went out there. That's the one saving grace. Like, if he said that exact thing to them in person before going and blasting them to the media and calling them out to see how they'll handle adversity the next time that they're out on the field, fine. But you also plant a bomb. This is the one thing that I hate when coaches do this, because you have to have some level of wanting to have self-preservation, right? So when let's say you have to go out there 3-4 weeks in a row and apologize for not getting your players prepared enough, at what point do people start to make that connection that, like, oh, this guy is repeatedly telling us he's not good at this job?
Exactly. Like,
maybe he is truly the issue. And you know, I don't want to I definitely do not believe that Washington State is soft as a generality. I think that that's too harsh. I think that they played soft when they let off the gas pedal against
UCLA.
And then I think when everybody started to float things about could they actually play in the weather in Salt Lake, that was almost like pointing to, you know, these Washington State kids are too soft to be in that environment. And it all sort of bled into, you know, what was going on. But the truth is, like, they don't have a very good defensive. They're not a good defensive team skill wise. They're not a good defensive team schematically. They can't stop anybody. They made Tyler Huntley, they made him look like a god.
Yeah, he was doing everything that I said he could not do. I was like, oh, okay, yeah. Well, he must have, him and Tyrone Whittingham must have been listening to the podcast. He's flinging the ball downfield and all this. But here is the thing I think is the problem with Washington State. I think that we got fooled and kind of bought the Kool-Aid a little too much last year. And I said this, and I hope that nobody takes this as being insensitive, but sometimes there's extra motivation in sports. And with the unfortunate passing of their quarterback, Helinski, in the spring, I think that the team had something to rally around. They had an emotional thing. Gardner Minshew came in. He was a good story. He was a really, really good leader. And I think he galvanized the team. They had a rallying cry kind of all season. And that's not there this year. So I think that that's the biggest difference from last year to this year. And sometimes it's just like that. So when he says we have the same kids, but it's different, I agree. You do have most of the same kids, but there is a big difference in kind of that motivation and all of that.
Yeah, and I, you know, this is a guy that likes to, you know, quote Sun Tzu and stuff like that. I just, you know, you look at some of these quotes on leadership, and you wonder if he's following his own advice. You know, with the victorious warriors win first and then go to war, while defeated warriors go to war first and then seek to win. Like, is going out and blowing up your team in the media going to war first and then seeking to win? Is Mike Leach acting defeated? You know, so maybe he should open up, crack some of those books that he spends all his time, you know, focusing on, and find a little saying to figure out how he can get things right out there. Because I don't buy into the fact that he believes this is a will issue instead of a skill issue. I think that Washington State has a tough time getting kids out there. You end up putting a bunch of 3-star recruits on the field, on the defensive side of the ball, graduating out some of your best ones, and you go up against some teams that have the ability to move the ball, that have some talent, you're going to screw up sometimes. It happens. It's really all in how you respond to that. And, you know, offensively, that's his job. That's his scheme. He has to make sure that he has the other team figured out. You know, if it's a matter of execution, fine, then make whatever changes, you know, you need to make. But to go out and just to say that, like, no, this is completely a will issue and not a skill issue, it wholeheartedly puts the blame on the players. There's no accountability for the coaches. You're just calling your kids mentally soft and saying that they're not, they're not in the mindset to get it done. And I think that I think it's intellectually dishonest to not admit that Washington State comes into some of these games at a little bit of a disadvantage. And the thing that puts them over the top is really supposed to be innovative coaching.
Oh, that is for sure. That is for sure. I do believe that Mike Leach is a good coach. I think that he's up against it, like you were saying, recruiting and all of that. You know, you have different luxuries at UCLA, USC, Oregon, Washington than you do at some other places. But speaking of UCLA, Ralph, I was watching the game. Mind you, you are the person who stood on the soapbox and said UCLA was only going to win one game this year, that they were going to go 1-11. I was vehemently against that. I said they were going to win the Pac-12 South. They started 1-0. They were on the road to victory in Arizona. DTR gets hurt. Dorian Thompson-Robinson, he was playing well. He gets hurt. They have to bring in their backup quarterback. They can't quite score quite as well. And then to top it all off, I'm watching the game. UCLA is getting ready. They're driving down. They're getting ready to kick a game-winning field goal. I'm sorry, a game-tying field goal, possibly. And they pan to the kicker, and I see just the kicker randomly bump into a person on the sideline. And I'm sitting there, I was like, oh, wow. Oh, my God, he bumped into the kicker. Oh, well, no big deal. Kid comes out, makes the field goal, but Arizona calls a timeout. He comes back, and he shanks the next one. Game over. And then I come to do the Pac-12 Apostles podcast. Thinking everything is cool, everything is fine. And then Ralph was like, yeah, I was going to get some sound from the UCLA game, but I had to hightail it out of there. I was like, why? And he said, oh, because I bumped into the kicker, the UCLA kicker. I was like, that was you? Oh, my God. Ralph, this is the biggest conspiracy that I can think of. You said that they were going 1-11. You are Khalil Tate. You are Khalil Tate's father or uncle, cousin, something. Khalil Tate Amsden, the Arizona Amsdens. UCLA is going to go tie the game, and you sabotaged them, Ralph. I am up in arms. UCLA deserves a victory for this. College kickers stink, but at the end of the day, like, is this what you had to do to get a victory?
Man, you have no idea how bad I feel about. Let's just get this out of the way. Like, I was outside the box. I was you because a lot of time reporters go down on the field with about 5 minutes left in the game, and so you know I'm down on the field. I'm taking some photos. I went down to Tucson. I was going to write a story on Khalil Tate. I was going to get some sound for the podcast. I get down there. I find out Khalil Tate's not playing. So it's going to be the Grant Gunnell show. He was at St. Pius in Houston, threw for a ridiculous amount of yards. 6'6" quarterback. Really, really good player in high school. He's getting his first start. And so, you know, I'm watching the game and trying to figure out an angle of what I'm going to do. And by do, I don't mean sabotage UCLA. And Dorian Thompson-Robinson, it was a really, really weird game for him because he was sort of playing well. He had incredible accuracy issues, and there's just not a lot that's creative about this scheme to get receivers out in the open. And so it was just it was a pretty brutal slugfest up to that point. So I'm down on the field. I kind of make eye contact with J.J. Molson, the kicker, and I don't know why I assumed, because I think most kickers do this. They kick from the inside.
Correct. Yeah, out like
and I'm on sidelines all the time, especially for high school. Yeah, you kick like toward the end zone into the net. And so I'm on the sideline. I kind of like I thought I made eye contact with him, and then I probably was there for a couple of minutes, and then he backs into me, and I didn't realize that this happened on camera. I didn't realize that this got broadcast. But my immediate thought was just like complete panic, because I know what it's like to, you know, have to be locked in. You're not supposed to talk to the kicker, right? Like, you're supposed to just leave them alone and let them get in the zone. And so I felt so bad that and so, you know, I moved out of the way so he could back up and get a practice kick. And as soon as he had that practice kick, I just hightailed it to the other end zone. And then he comes out and he hits the kick, but he got iced. Had he missed that first kick, I probably would have thrown up on the turf. Like, I felt super just embarrassed that even happened. And by that time, I probably had like 20 text messages from people who saw me on TV running into the kicker. And it was just like, man, I felt like I was going to have an anxiety attack on the sideline. And then he misses that second one. And I was just like, man, it's probably best that I just make my way out of the stadium.
But at the end of the day, it's not your fault unless when you bumped into him that like you had some sort of energy transference, like some sort of like voodoo bad juju that you like. I think it was the fact that you wanted UCLA to lose. It probably like transferred that energy to him. Oh man,
it doesn't look good. So yeah, I that was one of the things that I thought about last night on the drive back to back to Central Arizona from Tucson. Was I was like, well, that's going to be a dot that gets connected. But also, I mean, one conspiracy theory sort of cancels the other conspiracy theory out. Like, would I want Khalil Tate to lose like glory and shine to his backup more than I would want UCLA to get their second win of the season?
Okay.
So you kind of have to pick your conspiracy theory that you're going to go with.
Had Khalil Tate played, then this would have been more of a thing.
And so, but yeah, so yeah, Arizona getting the win makes Khalil Tate look bad, yep. Right? So it's a lose-lose for me either way, but I definitely like it, real talk. And I think if had you been in that situation and you got bumped into and it was broadcast at the same time, I think you would also felt like,
Sure.
Like I just, yeah. And the text messages were just, and then somebody like someone down here who has like a sports radio show, his name's Kevin McCabe. He tweeted that I helped Arizona win. And I was like, oh man, like there's literally no getting away. And then a TV station anchor like picked it up and made a joke about it. And at that point, I mean, I did not sleep well last night. I got called out by the pastor of my church for listening to the sermon with my eyes closed this morning. He texted my wife. He texted my wife that just said, like, hey, wake Ralph up.
Why does he have his phone in church?
Well, so he wasn't the one preaching. It was one of the other pastors that was up preaching, and you played against him. His Ricardo Stewart, he was a safety out at Arizona State back in the day. And he texts my wife, who usually does music on Sundays, and was just like, hey, tell Ralph to wake up. And I was like, so I thought that I couldn't feel any lower after what happened last night. But like my wife getting a text message during church from the pastor of the church telling me that it's very obvious that I'm in the front row, like listening to a sermon with my eyes closed. Oh God. It's not been a great like last 24 hours. But if I have to spike the football on UCLA still only having one win, I don't even know if
you
I have
don't
the
even
energy
get
to
do
that.
Cause you bumped the kicker. I was wondering why you weren't on the, I told you so bandwagon so much, because you had a piece of information that I did not have. Wow. Ralph. Jeez. But still UCLA is still in position to win the Pac-12 South. It would have just been a lot easier starting out.
They still could.
Starting
it's a mess.
Out at 2-0. I mean, think about it. Even when they were like 3-6 last year, they still had a chance to win the Pac-12 South. Same thing this year, except for they're going to pull it off.
Some concerning things about UCLA in this game is their offensive line looked good about one out of every four snaps. There were a lot of false starts.
Yeah, they did.
They had one offensive lineman, I think, just fall over before a snap, just fell on his butt.
Yeah.
It was like an Angels in the Outfield type deal. Like someone just came and pushed him over. And the other thing I noticed is that they had a tendency to also get bullied by some players who were pretty young on the defensive line for University of Arizona. They're a huge concern. But also it's weird that like there are certain pass formation sets where they all sort of come together and communicate where they look serviceable. But one-on-one, if you're spread out and you got any of those O-linemen going one-on-one against anybody who has ever seen a weight room, it's a problem. And I almost tweeted that like this, I deleted this tweet before I hit send because I thought it would be insensitive. But I was so ready to fire off from the press box in the second quarter, this offensive line is going to get Dorian Thompson Robinson injured. And I hate, because I was like, man, that's going to feel like a jinx. Like,
you jinxed him and you hit the kicker in the same damn day, Ralph. Wow.
Hey, can we talk about Grant Gunnell? Can we talk about the fact that he threw 29 passes in the first half of this game when Khalil Tate averages 27. Last night you saw the
I wonder why. And
so last night, it is very obvious that you saw what this Arizona team wants to be. They are, I've never been more convinced that they are counting down the days until Khalil Tate is no longer on campus, because they ask to have him there. He does not at all fit with anything that Noel Mazzone wants to do. And last night I had just like crazy flashbacks to 2011 when Noel Mazzone was the offensive coordinator for Arizona State, and he had 6'8" Brock Osweiler back there averaging 40 passes a game. And Grant Gunnell, I mean, the most Khalil Tate's ever thrown in a game is 45. And the only reason that Grant Gunnell didn't beat that by 15 last night, he ended up with 44, is because Arizona didn't even really have the ball in the second half. And so, and then they scored on a one play 75-yard touchdown, which obviously limits the amount of pass attempts that you're going to get. But that offense that you saw from Arizona last night is what they want to run. They didn't have J.J. Taylor. Gary Brightwell, who I thought was going to get 25, 30 carries just because, you know, to protect a young quarterback, he had one carry in the first half. And I think he finished with 7 total carries. And so, I mean, this is it. This is what they want to do. Okay. The Arizona you saw last night is the Arizona they want to be eventually.
Okay, speaking of that, I had a conspiracy theory last night, but I couldn't remember it. And I just thought about it right now. Khalil Tate is a true senior, right? He didn't redshirt.
Yes.
So last night when I was watching the game, Khalil Tate was out with a quote unquote lower leg injury, lower body injury.
Right.
He was bouncing around on the sideline like nothing was wrong with him.
He looked like he was at a party.
Correct. And that got me to thinking. I was like, didn't we just see this last week?
Yes.
With De'Aaron King at Houston, who decided to redshirt and then transfer.
Right.
And I'm thinking, hold up. Khalil Tate doesn't look hurt over there. Wasn't on the injury report. Maybe we have seen the last of Khalil Tate at Arizona, and we will see him pop up somewhere next year.
Yeah, I mean, he had 2 weeks off. No, you're not. And it's not a conspiracy theory. It's justifiable paranoia. It's as close as you can get to like PTSD. Right? Like we just saw, and this is one of the reasons why I told you on our last podcast that I don't feel very good about what happened, because now every time a quarterback sits out, that I mean, honestly, George, that was the first place that my mind went. And a bunch of people tweeted me like, do you think he's gone like De'Aaron King? And I was like, at this point, there's precedent. Maybe.
And
I mean,
I hinted at it. And then
You didn't know you said that exact thing.
Wow. And then when we were watching the game, I was like, he don't look hurt. He does not look hurt.
No, he had 2 weeks to get ready for this game. And so here's the other thing. If you want to take Kevin Sumlin's word for it, Khalil Tate is not effective unless he has all of his tools at his disposal. So what's the point of even putting him out there if he's going to be the quarterback that he was at University of Houston last year, where he had to throw the ball 45 times?
He's got a fever in his foot. That's what it is. I don't know if he's hurt, because anybody with a lower body injury and that's not good enough to play, they are usually sitting down on the sideline, or they won't have them on the sideline. That way they can get healed up. It looks super suspect, super suspect.
And yeah, and I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist. And we would not have even brought this up if it wasn't for De'Aaron King. But there's this part of you, like in the back, deep, deep recesses of your head, where someone like Khalil Tate, like, looks at De'Aaron King and says, Lincoln Riley would want me more than he'd want him.
Maybe
I'll beat him to it. Like, and that. Why I even have those. This is why I didn't like what De'Aaron King did, because now I'm Alex Jones 24/7. Right?
Yeah, you are.
I'm thinking about what they put in the water to make the freaking frogs gay. Like, that's all I'm thinking about. So I don't know, man. You're not crazy. And I don't think anybody who had those thoughts last night is crazy. And that was before you watched him having a good time on the sidelines.
Okay, so now with the Pac-12, you have a couple teams ranked. You have a couple one-loss teams. You have Arizona, who is a one-loss team, but they're clearly a non-factor in the national conversation in terms of a national championship. You have Utah, who is 4-1, who kind of, I guess, is somewhere in there. But the two teams that are – and you have Arizona State, who's 4-1, but they're not in the national conversation either because they're so young, their offensive line. If they even – like, it just doesn't seem possible that they could win the Pac-12. And if they did and got in the playoff, it would be an epic disaster. So it looks like the only two teams that have a real shot are Washington at 4-1 and Oregon at 4-1. So out of those teams, quote-unquote, mathematically, according to ESPN's FPI and all of this stuff, that the best chance to make the national championship out of the Pac-12, and it's only at, like, 35, well, the playoff is only at like 35%. Who do you think can make it? Do you think either one of them can make it?
I like Oregon more right now. They're just a more, I think, well-rounded team. But I still feel like Washington has a chance to go 11-1. And obviously that would mean a victory over Oregon. I mean, I hate to be wishy-washy and not like go out and make any predictions that I would then have to like sneak onto the field and tie someone's shoelaces together to make sure that they come true. But I do like to, and to my own detriment, I do like to stick to my original prediction and go down with the ship. So, I mean, I did have Washington coming out of the North. I had Oregon going 9-3 this year. It's looking more and more like there's no way that Oregon loses three games. Like, there's no way. Oh, yeah. And so, they could easily be a two-loss team if they don't beat Washington, but they look very strong. And if the consistency is there in the coaching ranks, and if their kids don't turn to, like, fat, soft whatevers, like Mike Leach seems to have a problem with his kids doing, then they should be fine to only have to worry about Washington.
Yeah, the other team that they were going to have to worry about was Cal. So I guess we'll get into the games there and start with the quarterbacks that are dropping like flies. It seemed like Cal had a real shot. They were undefeated. They were 4-0. Their defense was playing well. Chase Garbers had come into his own, even though you still tried to call him a bum. And I think that after the first half of the game, I think after the first half of the Cal-Arizona State game, that you had to admit, hold up, this dude is going somewhere, that Chase Garbers had officially, the light had come on for him.
Okay, so Chase Garbers, let's get this out of the way. Chase Garbers is not a bum. He's not a bum. He's a great kid. I had a chance to interview him a bunch. Thought he was coming to Arizona State. Would have loved to cover him as an ASU quarterback. So he's not a bum. I said he would probably regress to the mean. Now, okay, so I have a six-year-old son. He usually does pretty well in school, but every Friday he gets in trouble. Every single Friday. And it's become like this self-fulfilling prophecy of like, it's Friday, he's going to make someone mad. Whether it's his like music teacher or in the library, he's going to shout or something. We always get a note home on Friday. A couple of Fridays ago, he went and had like a flawless day. And like an optimist would look at that and say like, all right, like we're out of the woods. But to me, I looked at it and said like, all right, like the odds are the next Friday is still going to be pretty rough. Like that's the way that I look at it is like the pattern will usually win out. And so coming into this Arizona State game, I felt like that would be the case. Did he outplay my expectations early on in the game? Yeah, he absolutely outplayed my expectations early on in the game. Did Cal do anything about that? No.
I mean, they still didn't even get a chance to play in the second half, Ralph. And Arizona State fans, your cronies want an apology for me and for me to like for me to apologize and say that I was wrong. I was not wrong. I can't help a quarterback getting hurt. And with Devin Monster is horrendous. He is horrendous. I mean, everything that everybody thought Chase Garbers was, he is an All-American and NFL first round pick compared to Devin Monster. He went 5 for 14. He threw a pick right before halftime on a wide open touchdown. It was a wide open touchdown. He underthrew the ball so far that that Arizona State was able to intercept it. I give credit to Arizona State for winning the game, for doing enough to win it. But here is what I do want to apologize for, Arizona State fans. I do want to apologize for doubting Eno Benjamin, for not putting him in my top five Pac-12 players coming, offensive players coming into the season. I had him at
six.
You can't tackle this dude in a – well, you can tackle him in a phone booth because Arizona State doesn't block for him. But he had 29 carries, 100 yards, three touchdowns, and probably out of those 29 carries – and this is a conservative estimate – and probably right on target. Probably 21 of those carries, he was touched in the backfield. Touched by somebody from the opposing team in the backfield, and he made people miss. Got back to the line of scrimmage, just fought hard for yards. I don't know how great he's going to be in the NFL, but what I do know is this. The kid is electric. He makes people miss. He adds value to Arizona State, and without him, his particular skill set, they don't beat Cal. They don't beat Michigan State. They don't beat anybody because Jaden Daniels right now, 24 attempts, 14 completions, 174 yards. I mean, Cal's defense is strangling, and their offensive line was able to get some time sometimes, and the Cal coaches were surely upset because they left way too many people wide open.
Yeah, I mean, I do want to swing back to your whole point of like that Chase Garbers didn't have a chance to play in the second half. Maybe he comes out and does something. We don't know. You definitely can't say that he would have. And here's why. Do you know how many points Cal has scored in the fourth quarter this year, including the Arizona State game?
How many?
13. Do you know when that one touchdown they scored came? Against UC Davis. They had
They were up 20-0
They have not scored a touchdown in the fourth quarter since the opening week against an FCS team. So it's not like and that includes last week when they really could have used some breathing room against Ole Miss. And so to say that, you know, so I will give you maybe they score on that drive that he goes down. Maybe. But he also got sacked on that drive. Like, I'm not going to say he got himself hurt, but he did get caught.
So that wide open touchdown that Garbert, that Modster threw a pick before halftime, can you admit that that would have either been a touchdown or at least a field goal attempt? But most likely a touchdown.
It would have been better if he was in the game, but he wasn't in the game because he didn't judge the defender correctly, and he ended up with a shoulder injury because of it. So, like, that's partially on him. There's a wide open space. Either work harder to get to the sideline or get rid of that ball if there's nothing down the field. He had the ball for too long, right? He doesn't deserve to be blamed for his own injury, but that's not a good play. That's not a good – you can't come out and say, oh, good play by Chase Garbers to get sacked on the Arizona State sideline. It wasn't. And so, I mean, I feel like, you know what? Maybe Modster is everything that you said he is, or maybe Arizona State's defense to this point is actually good at what they do. They are the only team.
Oh, stop, dude. I cannot wait until they play a good offense. I can't wait till they play a good offense. They haven't played a good offense yet. Would you agree with that?
Well, Colorado got them pretty good. But I will say this. There are two teams in the country. Two teams in the country that have two top 25 wins. One of them is Auburn. One of them is Arizona State. So at some point, we're going to have to come around to the fact that, like, Arizona State is going to be in games no matter what. And unless you have the ability to close out or do something about it, they're going to be a problem. And that's what happened at Cal on Friday. I don't know that they would have all of a sudden scored more points than they had in the second half in the first set. If it was a repeat performance, they would have ended up with 14 points instead of 17. So I can't.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I am a little bit as high as everybody knows I've been on the Cal defense, and they still do an amazing job. By that same token, because mind you, they have only allowed 13, 19, 17, 20, and 17 on the entire season. And even within that, though, their defense has been sketchy at times. Like, they've allowed a lot of big plays, but they haven't allowed those plays to translate into touchdowns or points at times. Right.
And ASU did miss two field goals. It could have been worse. ASU missed two field goals in that game.
Correct. And so there was an opportunity for, like, there was a few times Cal didn't get any pressure. Their DBs lost track of Arizona State guys. Jaden Daniels is running around. And the takers in the secondary, they just did not have a good enough game to be able to fade their quarterback being hurt. Like, they needed to add more. And Cal was not able to run the ball as effectively as they needed to. Because you have Christopher and you had Dancy. Dancy made a couple nice plays. But at the end of the day, like, they weren't as effective running the ball as they needed to be.
If Garbers is out for an extended period of time, and the fact that we haven't heard anything about it is kind of concerning. If he's out for an extended period of time, do you open this competition up and say, like, hey, Spencer Brash, yes! I know you're as skinny as Jaden Daniels, but, like, let's challenge Sponsor and see what you can do.
There's nothing else that you have to. This kid is not good. He wasn't good at UCLA. He's not good at Cal. I mean, this was a really, really poor performance by him. There's no other way to say it. And here's the truth. Everybody knows how much I like Cal, their coaching staff and all that. They are shorthanded in terms of depth and talent. They just coach up a bunch of 2- and 3-star guys until they can continue to recruit. They had a better recruiting class this year. They'll continue to get better recruiting classes. But here is the nuts and bolts of it. Cal came into this game 4-0. They're now 4-1. And Chase Garbers, it clearly looks like he probably has a collarbone or a significant shoulder injury to, I think, his throwing shoulder, right?
Yeah, I mean, even at the probably the least bad thing that can happen to your throwing shoulder is an AC joint, and that's 4 weeks.
So the reality is Cal making a bowl game doesn't look real right now. They may get a win. Actually, they'll probably get a win against Oregon State, because Oregon State couldn't even beat a toothless Stanford. And Cal was getting ready to have game day. That it was going to be Cal versus Oregon. Game day was going to go to that game. But then Garbers gets hurt and they lose. They'll probably beat Oregon State. They're not winning at Utah with Monster at quarterback. Not beating Washington State because they won't be able to score enough points. The only way they'll be able to beat USC is because USC already can't run the football. Cal's defense is good. They'll be able to be good in the secondary. They might get a pick six, though they might be able to beat USC. They'll probably lose to Stanford. Well, actually, Stanford's offense is bad too, so that'll be a toss-up. They are going to be fighting to be in a bowl game right now. They were a 9 or possible 10-win team, and now they're staring at maybe missing at 5-7.
Man, what happened to the Devin Monster from the 2017 Cactus Bowl? Like, that was a guy that looked like he could play football. Was it just that Kansas State was preparing for Rosen and they got a little bit of a surprise, or what? Because this is, I mean, he looks like he can't play the position now.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think part of it is confidence. But another part of it is just that he just looks overwhelmed. He just looks way overwhelmed by the situation. The next game up, which was another good game that I lost as well. Not all of these losses were my fault. I mean, I can say that. They weren't my fault. I picked the teams that were supposed to win, and it just did not go that way for circumstances beyond my control. But the game that I did get right, USC Washington. USC 28, Washington 14. This was the number 17 team versus the number 21 team. And truthfully, USC, they had Hufanga, their number one DB out. He's their leading tackler on the team. They were missing Elijah Griffin, who's their best corner. They were missing. I mean, dude, they were the walking wounded. They're down two quarterbacks. They were down to Matt Fink, and he did not play very well at all. A TD, three picks, and two of the picks were just atrocious. And this is actually, USC was actually able to run the ball a little better than I thought they were. They ran for 212 yards, 6.4 yards a carry, which is their best of the season, really. And Washington just easily controlled this game, and they looked like the better team from start to finish.
Yeah, it's a pretty bizarre thing when you can go into Seattle, put 200 rushing yards on the board, and come out having been completely dominated. That big run by Ahmed was a backbreaker. I mean, they weren't going to – once it became a two-score lead, it was like this team, like the way that Washington – you and I said the way that Washington was going to defend USC going into this game wasn't going to be conducive to trying to go over the top the way that that worked last week. So, I mean, this went exactly the way we thought it would, right? There was nothing about this game that felt like a surprise to me. Matt Fink throwing three interceptions, that's the second time this year that a USC quarterback has thrown three interceptions. And now we're in this really weird place of, like, what's the best thing for USC to do at quarterback? They both have a win that people didn't necessarily expect. They both have followed that up with a three-interception game. Assuming that Keaton Slovis is healthy, what's the decision? Because I don't know. What would you do?
What are you talking about? This is an easy decision for me. I'm going with Slovis because Slovis – he won the one game, and then he comes back and goes to BYU and loses a game. And I blame that a lot on the coaches. I think that they wanted to protect him too much. They didn't let him push the ball downfield. But Fink is relying on these receivers too much. He just is throwing the ball up, just throwing it up just because he's
can got, we. Can we, at the Pac-12 Apostles podcast, can we send a collective middle finger up to BYU for what happened to them this week?
Oh, losing to Toledo?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. I mean, like, what are you doing? Like, you are a saboteur. It is almost like every single – so the Pac-12 was finally getting respect. Five teams ranked, six teams ranked. You know, people saying the AC – realizing the ACC is weak, the bottom of the SEC is weak. The Big Ten is questionable. The Big 12 has two teams. People were recognized in the Pac-12. And then Cal is undefeated. Quarterback gets hurt. BYU loses to Toledo. I mean, it was just a catastrophe for the Pac-12 this weekend.
Man, Toledo better win out. And they could. But I swear on my life they better win out because that looks awful right now.
Oh, yeah. What did you think about Jacob Eason, though, against USC? And USC's secondary was depleted. And he went 16 for 26, 180 yards. This is his second terrible game this year. He had a terrible game against Cal. And then he had another terrible game against USC. Now I'm looking at this with like, told you so, Ralph. Told you so. The kid is
cool. We're going to keep going back and forth on this. Inconsistency is an issue right now. Would you? So you're standing up on the hill that this is a terrible game for him.
Yes.
I mean, this is Jaden Daniels' stat line. That's what this is. did enough to get the win.
Difference
and threw for like less than 200 yards, did not turn the ball over.
The difference is Jaden Daniels is a true freshman who has no offensive line. And they weren't able to run the ball a lot of times. Jaden Daniels is just getting by. If Jaden Daniels were a sophomore or junior, having already started multiple seasons, and this is what he was putting out, what would you be saying about him?
I am concerned that he does not seem to be the one that can dictate his will, because what he is doing does not match up with what I painted him to be. It's making me look ridiculous. So I would prefer that he step it up at this point in time.
I do want to point out Washington for Salvon Ahmed, their running back. 17 carries, 153 yards and a touchdown, 89 yard long. I said at some point in time, because the kid is fast, he's fast, when that he was going to break loose, have a big game, have a big long run, because this kid is always one tackle away from breaking loose, going to the house.
Yeah, he's fun. I mean, he's not a star, but I mean, if you're gonna leave a running lane open for him, it's over. And you need that. Need that if you're Washington right now. You need the home run threat out of the backfield to be considered a complete team, because Oregon has that. So, you know, it maybe not in the sense of a traditional running back at Oregon, but like you can get somebody on a bubble at Oregon and it can, and they could take it 80 yards. Washington, I don't feel 100%. Like has that outside of what he was able to display. It's encouraging that they beat the snot out of BYU without him. But I mean, the fact that he was back and ready to go against USC is very encouraging.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. But to answer your question, who USC should go with, I'm going with Slovis, because Fink has back-to-back games where he was just kind of chunking the ball up. I mean, he chunked the ball up against Utah too. You know how sometimes you watch quarterbacks and you're like, wow, that dude passed the ball really well. He was hitting, you know, small windows, making throws that are difficult to make. And sometimes you see a quarterback, they're underthrown balls, and the receivers are actually doing all the work. That's what I thought there.
Man, they might have to paper, rock, scissors, and whoever loses is the starter, because Notre Dame sacked Bryce Perkins like 9 times last week. Notre Dame's defensive line is psychotically good this year.
Yeah, they are.
So, I mean, it might be like a loser starts type deal, flip a coin, because that I do think that they have a chance against Notre Dame, especially if they're going to actually have the ability to run the ball. But my God, did they get after Bryce Perkins? Like that was eye opening to me, and that's going to be in South Bend. Whoever starts that game needs to be whole. So it might end up having to be Matt Fink if there's any doubt at all that Keaton Slovis's wits are about him, you know?
Yeah. If his melon is still mushy, don't put him out there. Oh my Lord, a game that I lost to. I felt so bad about this because I went out on a limb and I actually kind of contradicted myself. So this is what I get. On the podcast, I picked Oregon State to beat Stanford. Stanford ended up winning 31-28. But a couple days later, on Friday, I was doing the Petros and Money show on 570 AM here. And that same day, we find out that Devin Williams, who was a former 5-star recruit, was leaving USC and transferring to Oregon State. Well, actually, we found out on Thursday that he was supposed to be transferring to Oregon State. They put him on the roster, all of this stuff. And then Friday, we find out from his Twitter account that he's enrolling in Oregon, which is where he should have been from the beginning. But he decided to go to USC. He wanted to be closer to home. He had some family stuff going on, but he knew he should have been with the Ducks to begin with. And I thought, and I believe he walked on at Oregon because they didn't have a scholarship available, and then they'll have a scholarship available for him in the fall. Like, wow. That's how, And I tweeted out, I said, it's not even the weekend yet, and Oregon State is already taking L's. And so that's what I get. I picked Oregon State to win, and then I contradicted myself because the tweet was freaking funny. And then I lost. And then I lost to Stanford, a toothless Stanford. This was bad, man. This was bad. I thought this was a slam dunk.
Yeah, I was holding my breath there for a minute. I mean, this Oregon State offense, when it turns it on, is special. I mean, and that fourth quarter, I don't know. I don't really know what was going on for Stanford there. Like, I don't know where it sort of slipped away from them, because Stanford's not really a team that plays to protect the lead anyway. They're pretty good at choking people out, right? Like, I don't know how this happened, but Oregon State went off in that fourth quarter, to the point where the fact that Stanford even had anything left to go on a game-winning drive was wild to me. And I do want to give a shout-out to Rivals' number one overall quarterback in the country, Davis Mills, who finally got a chance to show his stuff over the course of a full game that they actually put something together and won. I don't think we're in any position where there's any type of quarterback controversy at all, but it's nice for Stanford to know that if they have to go that route, that they can actually, you know, move the ball a little bit with him under center. I had said that this is the game where Cameron Scarlett was finally going to, you know, it was going to be a get healthy game for him. It did not go that way. He did not have a very good game at all. 24 carries for 92 yards. But they did enough. This Oregon State team just can't stop anyone, and they can't stop anyone when it matters. Take away that great offensive performance in the fourth quarter. It was mostly an Artavis Pierce game. Jamar Jefferson only had 4 carries. I don't know if he got hurt or what was going on with him. But our Artavis Pierce is also a very, very good running back, and he had a really, really good fourth quarter.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. And it actually, yeah, it was not a good situation for Oregon State, because this game was teed up for them. Like, this game was everything. It was sitting right on, like, they had the game at their fingertips. Stanford was down. They weren't having a good season. Oh, man, dude, this was so bad. This was so bad. I just knew that this was going to be a win.
Can we talk about Oregon State's leading receiver? Champ Flemings? Again?
Man, okay, So, yeah, he caught five receptions, 64 yards. Isaiah Hodgins, though, he did have 10 for 162. And he was part of, on Unafraid Show, we did the Pac-12 offensive players, like the players that could win offensive player of the year, right at so far at that point, the top five candidates. And he was on that list. He's on that list because he is having a special season. And along with him, obviously, you got Justin Herbert. And this was put out before this Saturday. You had Anthony Gordon on there, but I think he's going to be out of the question because Washington State's kind of falling apart. You had Aesop Winston from Washington State, Jacob Eason at Washington, who fell apart this weekend too, and Isaiah Hodgins. So after this weekend, the only two people left standing to me are Herbert, who didn't play, and Hodgins from Oregon State, because who else are you going to choose to be offensive player of the year right now?
And I think that he has a pretty good chance. Hodgins has a pretty good chance to put together an absolutely ridiculous season numbers wise, because I mean, they're going to be down a lot. So, but you also might, if Jefferson or Pierce keep going on, you know, off every single game, you might bleed some attention away. But it's weird because Oregon State has genuine stars on their team. But the rest of the glue that's holding it together is Elmer's glue and not super glue. You know, Hamilcar Rashed, 5 sacks in 4 games. On any other team in the Pac-12, everybody knows his name. Yeah. But on this team, it's just garbage time stats, right? So I don't know. They really need to find a way to get some play. Maybe they can keep – obviously, the Devin Williams thing didn't work out in their favor, but they need to be the team that ends up with transfers, whether, you know, Lane Kiffin style. You know, West Coast bounce backs need to be headed to Corvallis. They got to find some way to close that talent gap.
I mean, that's when they got good, when they had Chad Johnson, TJ Houshmandzadeh, you know, and then they got Steven Jackson right after that. So that was how they got good. But what did you think about Davis Mills? 245, three touchdowns. And like Stanford still does not look good. This does not look like a good football team or a team going to a bowl game. So what was your takeaway from them?
Well, Davis Mills by this point in his career should be ready to justify his rating as the best quarterback in his entire recruiting class. I mean, Davis Mills was ranked above some pretty good players. Jake Fromm, he was ranked above Jake Fromm. He was ranked 10 spots ahead of Chase Garbers. So this is you'd like to see him come in and actually like handle business and not be a game manager. But again, he was the number one ranked pro style quarterback from a class that overall was probably pretty weak outside of Jake Fromm. I mean, Hunter Johnson was number two, and now he's out at Northwestern basically, you know, running the ball every single time. Dylan McCaffrey was in there. Tristan Jebby has already transferred. You know, so not a lot of really, really great quarterbacks, but he was the best, and he doesn't look like a five-star. He doesn't look like a number one overall guy. He looks like somebody who's sort of just a game manager, and that can be fine for them if they can surround him with the athletes they need to play Stanford football. But as you and I have talked about over and over and over again, it's not looking like that's going to be the case anymore.
It looks like Stanford is dead. Like that they had their run, had their shot, and it's over right now. That's what it looks like. But the final game on the slate that we needed to talk about was, even though we already kind of hit on it a little bit, was Utah crushing Washington State. 38-13. I looked at this game like Washington State let UCLA beat them twice. Like that they couldn't get over the mental hurdle. They were still so stunned, embarrassed, all of that they couldn't gather themselves this week, and they lost the football game basically before it even started.
Yeah, I mean, this is weird, right? Because what would it take from Tyler Huntley for you to say like, oh, Tyler Huntley went out and won this game without saying Washington State lost the game? You know, what do you need to see from him beyond 21 of 30 for 334 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions, and, you know, two touchdowns on the ground? That's as good as anyone can possibly play. He won this game. He was better than the entire Washington State team. He's definitely better than Anthony Gordon. In this head-to-head matchup, you know, whether that projects to the next level, you know, whatever. Yeah. But this was the best game I've ever seen Tyler Huntley play.
This was the reason why it was the best game that you've ever seen him play is because it was the best game he's ever played. That's why. He was electric. He was throwing balls on the run. I remember he was getting ready to go scramble and then launch the ball down the left sideline for a strike, for like a 40-yard pass. I was like, who is this mass man? He must have heard the rumors about him, that the reason why they lost the game to USC was because he can't hack it offensively and he's limited. He was like, listen, I don't care nothing about it. He was putting up, I mean, like, these are damn near Jalen Hurts numbers at Oklahoma. Oklahoma's offense is just even better. That's what he did. It was very impressive. And Anthony Gordon, good Lord. From the second half of the UCLA game to now, he doesn't look very good. And mind you, I've not been a big, huge Anthony Gordon supporter, only because he was running Mike Leach's system. But even in that, he didn't have the same pizzazz and energy that Gardner Minshew had. And Washington State was unable to run the football. They couldn't stop the run. They couldn't stop the pass. And Utah just literally handed the ball to whoever they wanted to, whether it was Henry Cole, Huntley, Brumfield, Jason Shelley even came in, Wilmore, Vickers, Dixon, Simpkins, whoever the hell they gave the ball to, they did what they wanted to do. This was a all-time beatdown. I mean, this was just a take you behind the woodshed, pull you, and just whoop you. Just whoop you. Like, they'll put you in jail. You do this to somebody right now.
Yeah. And like we talked about, the last time that Utah won this game, it was behind star Lotulelei and a super good defensive line. And that's what Utah has again this year. And you can be a team that gets the ball out quick. And I think they threw almost 50 times. You're running Mike Leach's offense in this. But you're coming off of a game where you watched USC go over the top to get this win, and they're sort of trying to do the dink and dunk and play underneath, and you almost have to because you're not going to get time against this Utah line. So I think it was just stylistically, even though Washington State has come out on top, you know, four or five times in a row, stylistically this year, with as dominant as Utah's line was, it just wasn't going to look great for Washington State offensively. What I did not anticipate was Tyler Huntley having a Tim Tebow game.
Exactly. So, I mean, that kind of wraps up the whole entire Pac-12 in terms of the teams, the games, all of that. So now it is time for our Pac-12 power rankings. And Ralph, I know that you are going to be stunned at mine, but guess what? It is okay. But I will let you start out first with your first half.
With my first half, gosh. okay, so here we go. First half. I got Oregon State at 12, UCLA at 11, Stanford at 10, Washington State at 9, Arizona at 8, Cal at 7.
Okay, that's actually not horrible. That's not horrible, Ralph. Your order's a little jacked up, but... but I like the fact so your bottom seven, your 7-12 is the same exact teams as my 7-12, just a different order. I got Oregon State at number 12 in the Judah spot. I got Stanford at number 11. Yes, Stanford won, but they only beat Oregon State by 3 points. This is a game that Oregon State could have won. I got Washington State at 10. They looked terrible against Utah, and they just lost to UCLA. I got UCLA at 9 because this looks like a team headed in the right direction if Dorian Thompson Robinson is healthy. And obviously, they just beat Washington State. I think they'll beat Stanford. They can beat Oregon State. This just is what it is right now. I got Arizona in the 8 spot, and I got Cal at number 7. That's who I got.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty similar. The rest of mine is a mess that I don't feel great about. And actually, I will tell you that I just switched my, and then the more I think about it, I just switched my 5 and 6, which won't be great for a lot of my followers. But coming in at number 6, I've got Arizona State, followed by USC at 5, Colorado at 4, which I feel terrible about for some reason, Utah at 3, Washington at 2 and Oregon at 1 is how I finish up my power rankings this week.
Ralph, that is not bad, but I am going to switch your 5 and 6 with my 5 and 6. I got USC at 6, Arizona State at 5, Colorado at 4, which obviously you don't feel good about because their defense is woo.
Why would you feel good about having Colorado as the fourth best team in the conference right now? I mean, that just coming out of your mouth sounds weird, but offensively they did the job when they had the chance. We'll see how they do next week, but having a week off was the best thing to happen for this team because everybody else like eats their own tail and it just leaves Colorado sitting there for a week.
Yep, and then Utah at 3, Washington at 2, and Oregon at 1. I don't think that this is the worst thing ever. I think that the conference is still in good shape. And obviously, yeah. Oregon and Washington are kind of leading the way. And, you know, they still have a chance to make the playoffs. But Ralph, the last thing before we get out of here, though, so with the Pac-12 power rankings, you look at Colorado. Colorado looks like a team, even though that they are good, they look like a team that is not, you know, that is not necessarily going to stay in that spot going forward.
True, but with so many backup quarterbacks in the mix, because this is the whole thing, right? To beat Colorado, you just go score more points than them because they don't start quickly. Their offense can move the ball, but if you can outscore them, you should be fine. But the thing that's looking up for Colorado right now is that Arizona State's got a freshman quarterback. USC's on their third-string quarterback. Devin Monster is playing for Cal. Arizona is starting a freshman at this point in time. Stanford has had two different games where their backup has had to play, and Dorian Thompson-Robinson is potentially injured. He did not look good with coming out of that game. He was limping around on the sidelines when I saw him. And so the best thing that could work out in Cal's favor is that other teams also can't really score.
Oh yeah, 100%. But we want to thank you guys for listening to the Pac-12 Apostles. We appreciate your time, appreciate your energy. Make sure you guys share the podcast with a friend. Tell a because it's the best damn college football Pac-12 podcast around. The next episode will be out on Thursday, per the usual. Thank you guys. Peace out. Catch you guys later.